What's that? Well, oh, yeah. I watch the meetings once in a while. Watch the last one. I'd be happy for that to happen, but I'm only one of many.
Good evening, and welcome. We're going to open up the meeting for a brief interview for Harbor Advisory Board. Then we're going to we'll break until 6, and then we will go through the normal routine at that time. So we want to welcome Mr. McLeish and thank him for applying to Harbor Advisory Board, and thank you for your presence tonight. And please give yourself an introduction and tell us why you want to be on the board. And
yes, my name is Dana McLeish, and I've been a resident here in Morro Bay for about 34 years. And during that 34 years, I've spent pretty much all of that time as a recreational boater, sailing. And for the last 18 years, I've been a member of the Morro Bay Yacht Club. Helped the junior program about 8 years ago get that re-energized, and we have a very strong junior program. About a year ago, we started a foundation also for a youth sailing foundation. It's a countywide foundation, so we're getting that off the ground. Let's see. I just feel that there's a lot of area in the sailing arena that could be improved upon. I think that there's a lot of people in our community that would enjoy this much more. So being on the Harbor Advisory Board, I've like to help out as much as I can. It's where I live, it's where I play, where my kids play, and they live, and so it's seems like a good thing to do.
We appreciate you applying. Noah?
Yeah, thanks. As you know, the board is there really to be a sound piece for the council as issues come up. The Harbor Advisory Board helps us get public inputs and provide recommendation in part. And recently there's been some suggestions from board members about I would say roll up your sleeves type activities from the board, including exploring the idea of Friends of the Harbor and a committee to evaluate the future of the power plant. And I'm just curious to know if you feel comfortable with the board going in that direction of being a little more proactive given council support.
Yes, I think that's a good direction to go in.
Great, good answer.
George?
Welcome aboard.
Nancy? Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Hope we'll see you in the future a lot.
Carla?
Thank you.
Dana, I have no questions. I appreciate your willingness to serve, and I've had the good fortune of being the liaison for the City Council at the Harbor Advisory meetings the last year and a half, and I think that you'll be a great addition to the Harbor Advisory Board, bringing that a segment of the community to that, you know, with the sailing. And you know, we always talk about wanting to see more events and things that would benefit that community, you know, that part of the community, and bring people into our area. So I hope that, you know, that representation will start moving some of those things forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
If the wind's coming from starboard and you're heeled over to port, what tack would you be on?
You're on a starboard tack.
Yeah, you're good with me. Okay. This is going to be a very controversial vote now. I'm going to ask the council to vote whether they would approve of you being on the board or not. I'll make the motion. I move that we appoint Dana to the Harbor Advisory Board.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Unanimous. Thank you for serving. We appreciate it very, very much. And enjoy your work.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming tonight. And we will take a break until 6 p.m. Okay. Good evening and welcome. Welcome to the August 14th, 2012 Morro Bay City Council meeting. I'm glad you're all here with us, and welcome those of you who are watching at home. Let the record reflect that all members of the City Council are present, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. If you would please stand and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Morro Bay Fire Department Captain Steve Knuckles.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Steve. Great job. Announcements, Carla?
I should have gone last. I'm sorry. I don't really have anything. I just want to share that one of the local members of the community, Dick Bardini, recently passed away. He had been with Commerce Bank originally and then Coast National Bank for between the two, the last 20 years, and there's a service next Wednesday morning at St. Timothy's at 10:30 for him.
Thank you. Nancy?
I only have one announcement, and that would be to remind everyone that August 24th and 25th are Dahlia Day, celebrating our city flower. Friday from 5 until 8 in the evening, we'll have free wine and cheese and a speaker on how to take care of tubers. So if you don't know what a tuber is, you better be there. Saturday, 11 to 5, we will have plant sales, flower exhibits, and our keynote speaker will be Joe Sable from San Luis Obispo. And if you made it to the fair this year, you know that he won just about everything that included dahlias. We will also have wonderful dancing dahlias from the Pacific Dance Center. So be there. Or be very sorry. We look forward. And the last thing, if you're growing any dahlias at your house, be sure and cut some of those stems off, and we'll have two or three tables just for local dahlias. So bring your flowers along and display them. We'll put your name on there and be all set. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. George? Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I had a couple of announcements, but I would like to start by giving Ms. Luker the chance to review the JPA wastewater treatment plant proposal, update us on what happened with the Coastal Commission, and give the public the information they need to know when they can next make comments on the JPA project, the wastewater treatment plant project.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Just real quickly, the city had a hearing scheduled for the August Coastal Commission meeting. We'd been waiting for the hearing for a while. I think originally we were looking at winter of 2012, and then we were hoping for June, and so we did get confirmed in August. The staff report for that meeting came out on, or we were hoping it would be coming out on July 20th. Unfortunately, the staff report was available on the 27th, which left us just kind of a short time period to respond. As the council's aware, we went ahead and responded to that staff report, the commission staff report, and that document is on the website. I apologize in advance. It's rather lengthy. The staff report from the Coastal Commission is lengthy, and our response is lengthy, but we felt it was important, certainly, to make some clarifications and some comments on that information. We did find out on Tuesday afternoon, the 7th, that the commission was considering postponing the hearing, and then they confirmed that Tuesday evening. We did go up to the commission meeting on Thursday and provided public comment and urged the commission to move forward as we've been directed by the city and the district and hear the project in October. October was the first possible date. They're currently working on staff reports for their September meeting. The other downside of the September meeting is it's in a town called Caspar, which is in the on the Mendocino coast, so it's about a 7.5-hour drive. The October meeting is in San Diego. The November meeting is in Los Angeles, Orange County, and the December meeting is in San Francisco. So currently, to answer your second question, Councilmember Smuckler, I think people can make comment at any time, and we currently have a call into the Coastal Commission to ask them to fine-tune on when they think the hearing would be rescheduled for. But at this point, we don't know. They did talk at the commission level on Thursday about the possibility of October, and there were a couple of commissioners there that were pushing for the October date. We are setting up a series of meetings with Coastal staff again to talk about the project, and we hope to fine-tune that date. So as soon as we know, we'll put something on our website.
What do you anticipate for our JPA meeting schedule?
Just our regular meeting. We had scheduled a special meeting for next Thursday, and that meeting was canceled. The purpose of that special meeting was to go over the de novo hearing, the information that came from that de novo hearing. The next is a regularly scheduled JPA meeting on the second Thursday of September 13th. And that's just the normal meeting, and I believe it's going to be hosted by Morro Bay.
At 6 o'clock?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. A couple of other quick announcements. We do have another Veterans Support Group meeting with Deanna Kennedy scheduled this month, August 21st, at the Eagles Building, where it normally is. It will be at 6 p.m., going until 8 p.m., and that's on North Main Street, just before Sequoia. And it's there for veterans, help veterans get in touch with resources that will assist them, and to meet and collaborate with other veterans. So recommend that if you know anyone who is a veteran, to refer them to the meeting group and Deanna Kennedy, who is a great resource. And lastly, I just wanted to update the community and the council. I was able to attend, along with Mr. Endersby, the harbor director, the California State Lands Commission meeting today on the seismic study for PG&E regarding their potential study to evaluate the seismic impacts that the coast would have on the local faults could have on Diablo Canyon. And as the council knows, and many of you in the public may know, there's considerable interest from the community because the study and the evaluation involves very high decibel seismic soundings offshore of our coast, which have the strong potential to impact not only the environments and the fishery itself, but trickle-down impacts throughout our economy, because the potential is that it will kill fish and marine mammals, as well as those that aren't impacted immediately but are scared out of the area. So there was a really strong participation. The meeting today was at the inn at Morro Bay. It was Skyped into the State Lands Commission meeting. I believe that was in Sacramento. And what was amazing was the public comment was a strong turnout of people that normally aren't agreeing on anything, which was actually kind of heartwarming. It had environmental organizations and individuals and many of the fishing groups clapping for each other, supporting each other in their comments about, hey, let's slow the process down, which to our credit from the council, that was exactly what we had been asking with our letter to the State Lands Commission. And I, as well as Mr. Endersby, spoke to the letter that the council had sent requesting further evaluation of the economic and environmental impacts. And the hearing went throughout the day. I had to leave in the mid-afternoon before the commission had finished their dialogue. Mr. Endersby and I have been talking about what the final outcome was, but it appeared that the commission was going to disregard the community's input and not pursue further evaluation of impacts and potential mitigation, which would be very challenging but necessary to any short and long-term impacts. So I'm going to be bringing this up as a future agenda item for an update, but it's an important issue. Where it could go from here is the Coastal Commission as well as Fish and Game hearing. So please stay tuned for that, and if you are concerned, you can contact our harbor department if you're interested in getting some more information so you can make comment yourself.
Thanks. And thanks, Noah and Eric, for being there all those hours. There is no closed session report because we had no closed session. I'm going to invite Lara Ripsinski. I'm sure I've mispronounced your name. You're not the first one tonight, of Harbor Floral, to come up and present your business to us. Hi, Laura, and welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm Laura. I'm with Harbor Floral here in Morro Bay. I'm the local florist, and I'm excited to be moving from North Morro Bay to downtown next to the post office at 868 Napa Avenue. Our hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, and we do local deliveries. We do weddings and events, which we do specialize in, and anything that you guys would like to have done, birthdays, anniversaries, get well. Besides that, we're just happy to be doing what we're doing, and we do a great job, so come by and visit. Our ribbon cutting is August 23rd, and thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for coming
Laura,
down tonight.
Do you have a phone number and an email or an email or something? Thank you.
And I did bring a slideshow, but it's 805-772-0770. I do have a website. It's harborfloral.net. And email is harborfloral@tcsn.net. So, thank you.
Thanks, Laura. Okay, we're at the public comment period. If any of you would like to address council, this is the appropriate time. Please state your name for the record. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Please conclude if the buzzer goes off. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, everyone. Craig Schmidt, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. Too often in the hustle and bustle of life in Morro Bay, we lose sight of being thankful for all that we have. And I want to thank council and staff members for all their service and commitment to our community. So thank you, a sincere thank you. Coming up this Thursday, 5:30 to 7, Rabobank is doing a chamber mixer. They have a great activities plan, music, food, and adult beverage. So please show up and show your support for a great business that is a real strong community supporter. Also, I'd like to say a few comments about an article that was in the Bay News regarding the lighted boat parade and the kite festival. We are working with partners to try and keep those festivals alive. Rotary, I believe, has agreed to take on the lighted boat parade, and so we will assist them in that transition. And also, we have two groups, one a citizens group and possibly the Downtown Merchants Association, that's showing interest in doing the kite festival. So if there's anybody else out there that's interested in participating in organizing these events that the chamber will no longer be able to do because of reorganization, we'd like them to give me a call at 772-4467, and we'll do everything we can to keep that event in the community and help it grow. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. And thanks for everything you do for our community, too. Hi, welcome.
Hello, good evening, council members and mayor. Adrienne Harris, the director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, and I just wanted to come tonight to share with you a new education and outreach campaign that we have going on in our visitor center on the Embarcadero as well as online on our website. It's called the Clean Water, Great Life Campaign, and it's designed to educate and stimulate citizen action around clean water. The campaign showcases local residents like Paul Van Buren from the Dutchman and Eric Miramon from the Environmental Dive Services, showcasing these residents doing their part for clean water. Clean water is something we all value, and we are asking visitors and residents alike to take a clean water pledge. Small changes in our everyday actions can equal big impact for clean water. So this is our pledge that we have in the visitor center. We also have it online for folks that want to go to the website. And we're really asking folks to, you know, make simple everyday transitions, like make sure you pick up after your pet when you're taking them for a walk, conserve water and support businesses that do so, dispose of chemicals and trash properly, and use reusable items whenever you can. So these four simple things can help tremendously. We designed the campaign with support from Barnett Cox and Associates, which I believe is also working with the city on some of the tourism marketing that you're doing. They kindly donated some of their services to us to help us design these posters that I believe you got a packet of those that are hanging in the visitor center right now. So I'm very excited about that. We also had support from local photographers Dean Sullivan and Bill Shushek from Too Tall Studios to help us shoot photos of local residents. So I encourage the council members as well as viewers at home and visitors and residents alike to go to our website, which is www.mbnep.org. That's the acronym for Morro Bay National Estuary Program, to check out the pledge as well as the photos of our community members doing their part. Or you can go to the visitor center and check that out on the Embarcadero, which is on the corner of Marina and Embarcadero near Windows on the Water. So please join us and your fellow community members in taking the pledge to make everyday choices for clean water. It's part of what's making and what makes living in Morro Bay so great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Adrian. Hi, Keith. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and friends at home. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm a director of the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department. I'm here to let everyone know that we're going to close out sales of the bricks on Labor Day. So anyone that wants to get bricks or the stone for the front of the fire department should do so within that time period. Everyone pretty much knows what it goes for. It goes for our firefighters, whether it's paramedic or fire academy. And in the next meeting, we're going to make a presentation for two scholarships for two of our firefighters that completed the fire academy. This money is all our interest that we make from the money that we have in a foundation, the Stuart Reed Foundation. So, you know, anyone that's ever had to have the fire department or whatever, think about this because it's helping all of us with the training and that for our firefighters. And we, as I always say, are very lucky because we have 10 firefighters that are full-time, and each one of them is a paramedic. We have over 70% of our calls are medical emergency, so when they come, you know you're getting the very best you got. So I urge everyone to get off the couch and buy a brick or a stone, and it'll be there for at least 75 to 100 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith. Kathy? Hi. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here this evening representing the applicant for the 1885 Ironwood Project and his request on item D1. I've provided you with a letter with considerable information, so I won't take time to go over all that tonight, but I'll be brief in my comments. There are two issues to this request. The first is regarding the building plan check fees set by the city. Since the project has seven identical units, the applicant is requesting that the council allow for at least a 50% reduction in the plan check fee for the duplicate units only. This would mean that the first unit would pay the full amount on the plan check and subsequent identical units would then pay the reduced rate, since staff time necessary to review the plans for code consistency would be less. As a side note, the applicant has only paid a portion of the total building permit fees to date, and this request would not generate a refund. Standard procedure for paying building permit fees is to pay approximately one half with the plan check submittal and then the balance of the time the city issues the building permit. The second item tonight is in regards to the affordable housing in lieu fee. First, let me be clear that the applicant is not trying to forego his payment into the affordable housing in lieu program, but rather ask that he not be charged twice for the same mitigation measure for this project. As I mentioned in my letter, there is a requirement to provide affordable housing opportunities within the coastal zone. To achieve this, Morro Bay and other cities in the county collect an affordable housing payment in conjunction with building permits. Another way to collect this fee is at a higher rate is through the subdivision process. The housing element policy requires subdivisions and larger projects that are eight or more units to pay an incrementally higher rate towards the affordable housing program. The affordable housing in lieu payment also mitigates for the construction impact for each new home within the project as required by law. While researching this item to provide staff with additional information, I posed the question to a couple of other cities in our area as how they implement these fees. Clearly, the answer was that the affordable housing in lieu fee was charged at either the planning side for the subdivision or at the building permit for the new construction, but the fee is not charged on both sides of the permit. In summary, I do not believe that there is a nexus that allows the city to collect the fee that mitigates for affordable housing at the time of the subdivision and then turn around and assess affordable housing mitigation fee at the time of the building permits. This project has been conditioned and will pay the mitigation for the impacts of the affordable housing program by paying their share at a higher rate than the other single-family homes. On behalf of the applicant, I would respectfully ask the council to determine the following. One, that the duplicate plan check fees for multiple units as a part of one project shall receive at least a 50% reduction in the fee if the first unit has been paid the full amount. And number two, that the affordable housing in lieu fee collected based on the subdivision project and consistent with the housing element has adequately met the mitigation measures and shall not be assessed a second time with a building permit. That concludes my presentation. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Kathy. Who would like to go next? Hi, Janice. Always a pleasure
Hello,
to see you.
Hello, Mayor and Council. Janice Peters. I wrote an opinion piece that was printed in the Tribune after their editorial on the wastewater treatment plant. And I've had a lot of people saying, where did you get those numbers? So I wanted to at least explain where I got the numbers here in a public area because I didn't explain it in the article and I probably should have. The residential base charge that we are estimating, and granted, all of it's an estimate right now, on the project that we have submitted to the Coastal Commission, is $56 for base rate, no extra, no overages. The estimate, if we move it to the Rigetti property, it's $85 base rate, no overages. Overages make it higher. The things that we have to deal with in moving it are the total purchase price, $2.4 million, I believe it is, the possibility of a 218 vote, extension of the city limits because we don't have a sphere of influence there, archaeological studies and mitigation, changing the zoning from agriculture to industrial, seismic studies, is it on a fault, and mitigation, the new plans, reviews, additions, corrections, and resubmittals to all the agencies that we've already done for the last 4 years, acquiring easements from Caltrans to lay the pipe at $150 a foot or $800,000 a mile, new lift station, at least one, to push all the sewage uphill instead of letting it flow downhill. The ongoing power, parts and repairs, and personnel to maintain the lift stations. And any other incidental things that might come along. Yes, my estimates are worst-case scenario. I admit that, and I probably should have said that in the article, too. However, it's been my experience in government and in a situation like this, that the worst-case scenario is often the scenario you end up with. So better be aware and have people realizing how important this is right now and hopefully getting the input and the information that we need to make the numbers accurate and hopefully lower than my worst-case scenario. That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janice. Thanks for coming down tonight. Anyone else? Betty? Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz, and I'd like to speak to three of your D items. The first one is the one that Ms. Novak just spoke to, which is D1 regarding the Ironwood project that you can see the construction on out beyond Miners. It is two different items, and in light of reading her information in the staff report, I would suggest that she's asking for things that we don't currently provide for in our codes or in our fee schedule, and that is the offsetting fee for reduced fees. Half the cities in the county do it, half don't, so there really is no precedent. And so to go by what the city currently do would be the normal thing. Regarding the in-lieu fees and the low-income fees, I believe that she's confusing that those two fees are the same thing and they're really two separate items because the developer should be providing housing on-site and the developer is not. And so because he's not, that's why that fee is there. The other fee is because of the low-income fee. And I think staff tries to make that point very clear in their staff report that they are distinct. Regarding item D2, which is about the development of a plan for the Rock and the North Embarcadero and Coleman Park area, lots of information in there. However, there were no pictures. There was nothing there that shows what has been talked about at Parks and Rec, at PWAB, at planning, or anything. And that was a real loss, at least in terms of what was online or what was in the packets at Mills and at the City Library. So I'm not sure how you can move forward without seeing what's going on. And D5 has to do with your sending a representative to the League of California Cities, which is something that we all support. However, there was an a request in there about having the council discuss 5 of the votes that will be taken at that meeting, and it wasn't listed in your staff report that you're going to discuss those 5 items. So my question about that is, will that be agendized later for your next meeting, since the meeting's going to be in September? And then finally, I just want to make a comment about Ms. Peters' comments regarding the cost of moving the wastewater treatment plant. She may have done some calculation based on cost that she perceived as moving the plant, but she does not take into consideration offsetting costs that we will reap because of the piece of property that we're getting and the piece of property that will become available on the waterfront, or excuse me, on the beach.
Thank you. Hi, Gary.
Hi. So my granddaughter's going to talk first.
Great. Hi.
Hi, my name is Annie Kay, and I come from Merced, and I'm here to spend the week with, like, 2 weeks with my grandma and grandpa. And I just wanted to comment on the camp that I'm going to this week. It's beach camp, and we learn how to surf, and it's really great. And I just wanted to let you guys know that it's really fun, and if you want your kids to join, they're doing it every year. And it's just a really good camp. They teach you how to surf every day. You get to boogie board, too, and it's really fun.
So Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. Just want to say good evening, Morro Bay, City Council, the mayor, the worker bees, TV Land, everybody else in Morro Bay, and especially thank the Olympians and especially USA. This is my opinion after reading this big report that was submitted, over 400 pages on the wastewater treatment plant. There were many reasons why the Coastal Commission had to postpone the Morro Bay water plant that was to be held in Santa Cruz several weeks ago. The Coastal Commission staff's final report, over 400 pages, was submitted to the Coastal Commission was so misleading with misinformation that the Coastal Commission had to postpone the meeting and tell the staff to rewrite the report with the missing information, such as the big one, the technical one, the fine screening report. It was not postponed the way it was reported in the Slow Tribune. It is so sad that the Tribune always has the one-sided letter to the editors and all those other ones that have been misleading the readers about the wastewater plant since the beginning. They seem to only want to cater to the small group in Morro Bay against keeping the new wastewater plant where it is. However, this is an interesting fact. When the PERC company backed out of the last minute, this same group was very happy keeping the new wastewater plant where it is today. The misleading information was given to them by a small group of people in Morro Bay, and this is my opinion, have been meeting behind the scenes with the Coastal Commission staff, giving them misleading information. This is one of the many reasons why the city had to hire a consultant to protect the Morro Bay citizens' interest, because the city personnel still have a city to run. They don't have all the time like this other group that spends 24 hours a day misleading not only the Coastal Commission staff, but citizens of Morro Bay. Being an engineer myself, and spending many hours with the engineers at the Morro Bay facility to learn more about how the wastewater plant functions, it is my opinion that the new plant 1 mile up the Highway 41 has got to be one of the most ridiculous engineering mistakes I've ever seen. And my son, who is a superintendent who goes all over the country as a sharpshooter, he agrees with me. And what Janice said about those prices are true. The power usage alone gives up four times the carbon print. If a tsunami does hit, what they predict, it would wipe out Cayucas, Morro Bay, Los Osos, and all the pump stations that would be flooded too. Finally, if they decide to move the plant up 41, you think Caltrans going to allow digging along 41, having the pump station at 41 and Main Street in order to pay for this starting? Immediately, your sewer bill is going to go up, et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera, because anyway, thank you for listening. Good evening. Have a nice one. Goodbye.
Thank you, Gary. Anyone else? Don?
Greetings. Mr. Mayor, City Council, staff, people watching at home, my name is Dawn Beatty and I live in Morro Bay. What I'm about to say should be familiar to many of you, except perhaps the folks watching at home, as it comes from an email that I sent last month. Looking back on what I call the three-part dance to levy the cluster's assessment, it's too bad that the engineer's report provided in May was approved as is, as it barely represented the budget for cluster's assessment work. It was based on in-house work when contracting out was called the plan. I recall no one mentioning that we homeowners would like to see a more honest representation of dollars, but I don't know where that suggestion went. Now that we have a contractor on board for the majority of maintenance, is there any way to request that staff provide a more accurate budget for our about $149,000? It appears that every year's engineer's report is essentially the same as the prior year's, and they truly don't represent reality. We just had another committee meeting, thank you, Joe, where this item came up. I don't recall how it was addressed, so I'd like to see if this council would request for staff a real budget with a hard due date. Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn. Good evening, Linda. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, council and staff. My name is Linda Merrill. I was disappointed to learn that the Coastal Commission hearing regarding our wastewater treatment plant had been postponed at the San Jose location to the San Diego site. I ask that you all, council and staff, please try to get this meeting regarding our important project to be held in San Luis Obispo County. We have had meetings, the California Coastal Commission meetings in San Luis at the Embassy Suites in the past when it's important to our people. I believe it was the North Coast plan that they came to our community to hear. And this is really important to the citizens of Morro Bay. And I'm sorry to say that I just do not have the energy to travel long distances. And I would like to ask, and I am sure there are people in our community who cannot go to San Diego, certainly not at all centrally located from any viewpoint that I can see. And I would like to ask you all to, on our behalf, to try to ask them to come closer to us. Thank you very much. Also, regarding Ms. Peters's comments, no one knows the cost of the wastewater treatment plant. This new plant will cost more no matter its location. So I would like to ask that people stop these scare tactics and coming up with numbers that suit their own needs, and that we just keep that in mind. Thank you all for have a good evening. Good night.
Thank you, Linda. Anyone else? Anybody? I figured you were going to...
Well, good evening, council, staff,
welcome.
Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Roger Ewing, Morro Bay resident. I participate in these meetings through the television, and for the past preceding, ever since the election, at every meeting, we have been subjected to vitriol, lies, misinformation, scare tactics, as Linda Merrill just said, and it's getting very bad. Mr. Johnson outright lied. You can mention my name anytime you want, Gary. He lied. I am one of the appellants on the wastewater treatment plant. Not one of us have met with the Coastal Commission staff. This kind of behavior, and you allow it, Mr. Mayor, you allow this kind of behavior. He and two others, and you know who I speak of, have gotten up at your meetings and made a mockery of what Morro Bay should be all about, community. This doesn't help community. This perpetuates divisiveness and the inability to compromise and do what's right for Morro Bay. And this wastewater treatment plant issue is the perfect example. We want it moved because it's in the wrong location. It's in a floodplain. It's in a tsunami plain. There are earthquake faults. This is a plant that has to last for 50 years, not five. And when you base policy decisions merely on money, you lose. And the past 20 years proves it. Where is our commercial district? Gone because previous councils of your philosophy have paid more attention to money gained by residential property because that's where the money is. And we've lost our commercial zone in North Morro Bay. And those people up there who have businesses up there have a right to be pissed off. And I'm sorry, I am very pissed off, and I don't have a business in this town. I don't own anything in this town. But I believe in the spirit of community. And I'm tired of the mockery and the hypocrisy. And I'm tired of the lies. I don't mind having my philosophy challenged. But what I do mind is to have it challenged by lies. And I apologize for my behavior. I thank you for your patience, and I thank you for listening.
Thank you for coming.
Good night. Thank you.
Anyone else? Anybody? Roger, if you stick around 1 minute, I'll address your comments first, and then you can be off. Okay, going once, going twice, back to council. Thank you, Laura, for coming down, and Craig, Adrienne, Keith, Kathy, Janice, Betty, Annie Kay, pleasure to have you here, Gary, Dawn, Linda, and Roger. Because I know Roger wants to leave, I'm just going to address him first, Roger, and we certainly hear your passion. I don't cut anybody off. We have a First Amendment in this country, and I don't think you've ever heard me say, you can't say that. I just don't do that. I don't judge what is truth and what isn't truth. You came up here and used the words pissed off twice. I didn't say, you can't say that. I just don't do that. This is the public comment period, and any member of the public can come up here and say whatever they want in any kind of language they want, unless it gets extreme. So, I'm sorry for your frustrations with some people, but that's the system. It's America, and we can all speak our mind and speak with the passion that you spoke with or that Gary speaks with or Betty or anybody else, and we respect hearing your views, and I'm sorry that you take offense to that. Thank you for sticking around for that. Linda, Coastal Commission meetings, we don't have any control over where they decide to hold them, and I think that they hear matters from all over the place at every meeting, and we know we've received copies of several letters that have asked the Coastal Commission to move the meeting here, which is your right. Our interest is in getting this on the agenda as soon as we can. We were very disappointed, too, that it wasn't heard. Up, down, win, lose, however you want to look at it, we all want it behind us, and let's, move on, whichever way it goes. So that is our desire, is to get it heard as soon as possible, and that's what staff has been charged with, and that's the path they're on. So any other things you want to address? You said no? Like, Anything? Great. We appreciate everybody coming down tonight and speaking. And we are at the consent calendar. Item A7 is pulled. Any other items to pull?
I'd like to pull A6, please.
A6. Nancy?
Yes.
Gentlemen? No? Okay, could I hear a motion, please, approving items A1 through A5?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. A6, Carla?
I'd like to pull A6 and ask for continuance to the next meeting so that I can include some information that was not included. We kind of put it to staff before it was finished, and I'd like to change it a little bit.
Works for me. We don't need a motion on that, do we, Rob? We can just do that? Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're 15 minutes early for public hearing. That's right, B1. I didn't announce it. B1 has been continued. Can we do that now before 7?
No, you should do it at 7 just in case, and then you would open it and continue it.
How about, do you think D1 would take time? More than 15 minutes? They all have that potential, unless we get to this last couple. Let's give it a shot. Better to be late with. We can't be early. So let's do, if there's no objections, D1. D1, Rob?
Sure. This was a request from applicant at a project at 1885 Ironwood for a reduction in fees for building plan check and affordable housing based on my response that I didn't feel at a staff level that we could reduce those fees based on the existing city code and city policy. First, regarding the plan check fees, our fee ordinance does not anticipate a reduction for economies of scale or duplicate plan check. After speaking with the city's building inspector, we did not feel that this was that there was a complete duplication in these plan checks due to it being constructed like a townhome project, and these buildings would be tied together. That there would be some there could be some common plan check items, but each one has to be reviewed. Regarding the affordable housing fee. Both these fees are specified in our code, and we did not have the ability to make a reduction in those fees. That concludes my staff report. And
thanks. Questions for Rob? Carla?
Well, I'll just start with one. I'm confused then, because based on the letter from the applicant and the request, it states that I believe 7 of the units are identical, and so you're saying that the plan check wouldn't be a duplication, that they're not the same. So
there's possible that there's overlap on the structural items, but each of the buildings are also tied together, so each of the buildings does need to be reviewed. I guess the main point is we have no authority to provide that reduction based on the code that's been adopted and our master fee schedule.
Okay, I'll save my comments.
Well, I think we have the authority. So the question is, what is the overlap? Is it more than half? It seems to me that they're pretty much cookie cutter, and that's what their basis is.
Cities that do have duplicative plan check fees typically are for production housing, where you're building a multi-lot, many-lot subdivision where you're doing production housing. Many of the same home is placed on a lot. This project is a townhome project being constructed like apartments. It would This would be a completely different way of viewing plan check. Another option could be is we could perform the plan check on a time and materials basis, and although not provided in our code, council could allow us to do that, and we would charge the applicant for what the actual costs are in the plan check.
Respectfully, Rob, I don't feel I got an answer to my question. What is the overlap?
I don't know, because we have not been submitted final building plans for these projects that I have personally reviewed. Based on my comments from my building inspector, he does not believe that there's enough duplicative items to constitute granting this kind of duplicative plan check.
Well, he couldn't grant it because, as you said,
recommending a... Okay. Sorry, excuse me.
I'm not picking on your
own.
Okay, some clarity there, Nancy.
I don't know. I make this sound too much like a little, I don't know, contradiction or complaint. But we're talking fee schedules here. You mentioned that you didn't have the right fee schedule authority. Yet in July, fee schedules came up. And none of this came up in that discussion, and that kind of bothers me a little bit, that we didn't look ahead and discuss possible fee schedule differences or what might be missing in our fee schedule.
I guess in staff's view, we didn't feel that it was an item that was missing in the city's fee schedule.
George? No?
Yeah, a couple of questions. One, just to confirm, well, first to thank Ms. Novak for doing the review of other communities in the county, but to confirm that it's about 50-50 as far as different jurisdictions that offer some sort of duplicative refund or recognition of the potential to have savings for duplicate plans and the plan check savings that could come with that. Am I correct in...
I believe that is true.
Roughly 50-50. And in talking with the building inspector, how confident are you that we're within the range of 100% cost recovery with the current schedule and in relation to this project? Would you say we're fairly close to that 100% recovery and not biting too much into actually the potential of making a profit that's significant, or it's my question's trying to get to a fairness question here, and knowing that there have been other projects that have gone through this same process and not received refunds. So in this case, would you, from talking with the building inspector, would you feel confident in saying that we're right around 100% cost recovery, or is it significantly over 100%?
Well, our building plan checks are based on the values in the building code. So those are based on industry norms. I would suspect that we're it's an average of all projects together, and I would say that based on all the communities that use the building code, that we would be close to cost recovery on that.
And again, it is based on the average. So we're trying to, with the existing rules and code and fee schedule, we're trying to be as fair and consistent as possible. And if we do see issues, then it would seem like we'd want to go back in and address that on a universal scale, not on a case-by-case scale, because then you're opening up potential for other people to feel like they haven't been fairly treated or they've been held to a different standard. Am I correct in having that concern?
Yes. I would view that if we had production housing type projects here, that a production housing type plan check would be appropriate.
And so if we could just talk briefly about production housing. From what I understand, that is at a scale that we haven't seen too frequently within Morro Bay. And although the project on Ironwood is fairly large for Morro Bay standards, it most likely wouldn't qualify for production housing designation because of its size. It's not in that scale.
Well, it is a large project in recent history in Morro Bay. I wouldn't say a 14-unit townhouse project is large by any scope of the imagination as far as production housing goes, in my experience. So, no, I wouldn't say that a 14-unit townhouse project is a large production housing project.
Okay. And then to move on then to the affordable housing request to refund or to offer a reduction in those fees, the concept for, as I understand it, the concept for the affordable housing is to, the idea is to bring in funds to make sure that we're maintaining an affordable housing volume in our community, an offering of affordable housing in our community. We like to see those projects, building projects, include affordable housing, but in lieu of that, they can go out and pay into this fund. And the cost of paying into the fund is in itself a savings rather than developing the affordable unit. There's a savings in just paying into the fund itself.
Typically, that is true. Rather than providing the unit on site or the units on site, it typically is less expensive to pay into the housing in lieu fund. Projects of 8 units or more are basically required to provide units, and the developer can ask for which they did in going through the Planning Commission process for payment of in lieu fees instead of building those units.
Okay, and the idea is that a standard single residential project will pay into the affordable housing. There's the 30 cents per square foot, or approximately 30 cents per square foot fee for affordable housing, which is the end of the affordable housing charge for most single-family residential on your typical scale. As the project, as the lot gets larger or gets closer to that 8 units potential plus, that's what triggers the second, basically a subdivision fee for affordable housing to try to cover the affordable housing needs within the community. There's a reason for that, and not your standard single family residential would not be charged that second fee.
That's correct. They're two distinct separate charges. One is for individual single family homes, and the other is for larger projects.
Okay. So those are my questions. Are you ready for comments?
Yeah, go.
Well, I mentioned it, but I think I can understand looking at this from an outside perspective, as the developer probably is, having experience in other communities where there are a number of large-scale subdivision-type projects, and they probably do have these sort of fee structures in place. We do not. I think it would be messy for us to go ahead and grant this tonight on this scale. I'm not convinced that this project should qualify for either of those reductions tonight, so I'm not sure I would go there if we were to come back with this. But I think tonight's not the place to make this decision. If we really do feel like there is an issue here, we should follow the process and do it on a universal scale rather than a case-by-case, which just is going to create the situation where we're going to be dominoing into other past projects or future projects coming before us and taking the time to lobby us for some sort of refund. So I would submit that this isn't the process that we should follow, regardless of what side of the fence you fall on for the refund itself.
Well, I'll just jump in and disagree with you that We make exceptions. We had an appeal tonight. We make exceptions all the time. It's not beyond our purview to do that, and we're certainly capable of it, and it's on our agenda, whatever's happened in the past has nothing to do with it. This is a unique situation. You make it sound like the floodgates will open, and, how many 14-unit, 20-unit, 10-unit, identical, near to identical projects do we have? We don't have that many. It's a unique case. It's a unique request, and I think we should act on it. I'm not convinced, from what I've looked at, that there's that much work in the additional units. Rob is stating that each plan is different and basically alluding that it's going to take nearly as much work for each unit as the previous, and I'm not an engineer, but I don't see it. I think it's a reasonable request. A 50%, pay the full amount on the first one, get a 50% reduction on the rest. I'm good with that. I'm still not clear on the answer to Noah's question about the affordable housing fees, how they're different. If you could just do that one more time, maybe I'm a little soft-headed. Maybe.
There are two separate fees provided by city code. One is for a in-lieu fee that is per square foot of construction, the 30 cents per square foot that gets applied on every residential project. The second requirement is through the city's housing element that projects of 8 units or more are to provide in-lieu housing with their development. So it's in addition to the 30 cents a square foot for those larger projects is what the housing element requires. So it's above and beyond. Now, the code also allows an applicant to, instead of building the affordable units, they could pay for that. So they prepare a cost estimate of what the construction costs would be for the units and pay into the in-lieu housing fund. So there are two separate fees.
I'm clear now. Thank you. And that makes sense to me. Either provide the affordable housing or pay for them for not having them. So I do see a distinction there. I'm going to side with the applicants on the permit fee. That's the way I see it. George?
Yes, that's the way I see it, too. The in-lieu fee is kind of, it looks like it's black and white here. I mean, either they have to build the houses or they have to pay for it. So I'm a little confused a little bit on that one. But
took me 3 times.
I share George's confusion. It still sounds to me like they're paying twice. They're paying their in-lieu fee, and then because they're not building a low-income housing as part of their project, they're paying again. So it just sounds to me like they're paying twice for the same thing. Maybe that's just my confusion. The other thing I would look at is the plan check duplication. I kind of agree with Mayor Yates, and I think I can't see going clear to not charging, but I think it would be fair if it were only a 60% of the original cost. I think that would pay the city's costs, and it might save this person a bit of money. Here we have somebody, I agree again with Mayor Yates that this is a big project for Morro Bay. I mean, we have a housing project that's sitting out there on North Main Street that may or may not ever get built, but we haven't had a 14-unit development around here in a very long time. And I really think we need to help our builders and our economy and get this thing going and do what we can. So I'm I say 60% for the duplicate plan check, and I still am feeling that he's paying twice for the in lieu.
I agree with Councilmember Johnson. I think that, you know, what Mr. Leivick was explaining was the options of paying or building. Did you get him? But what was being alluded from there is that they're paying the fees on top of whether they build the unit, they have to pay fees, and if they don't build the unit, they're paying in lieu and they still. So there's two fees. It's similar to what the request was in the comments about paying the park in lieu fees and the Quimby fees, which are park fees, double dipping kind of. So I feel like we're still not really addressing what what the question and the concern was about that. As far as the duplication, I believe also hearing Mr. Leivick's comments earlier were that the building inspector really hasn't at this point, you know, made a final review of how like those plans are. So I disagree with Councilmember Smuckler in the sense, one, that it is not a refund because they haven't yet paid it. So we're not refunding anything that we haven't charged yet. And my frustration in part is that there was a Blue Ribbon Committee that met a few times discussing over a period of time some concerns at the Planning and Building Department, such as fees and timelines and things like that. And it seems that based on that, those meetings and that information, that we're being reactive now instead of proactive. And this is something that staff could have brought to us when we were addressing our master fee schedule as one of those items out of that meeting. I'm a little disappointed that we're being reactive when we could have addressed these. And I hope that perhaps we can look at a future agenda item tonight of amending the master fee schedule to include this in, if that's why it's before us, because it wasn't there, so that somebody doesn't have to come each time. I would support the 60% for the identical plan check, and I'm still not sure about the in lieu fees on the affordable housing.
Well, I think we're at a point where we need to make a decision. Yes, Noah.
Comments. The initial fees for plan check and so on, we've heard our staff's comments tonight and their testimony. So I'm a little disappointed that it sounds like the majority may be interested in disregarding that or going against that. And Ms. Borchardt does point out that we're still waiting for final review, so why don't we do that and allow staff to do a review? We still haven't heard the actual number of what financially this means, which is an interesting question. I'm not sure it necessarily is going to influence the decision, but what would be the harm in waiting for our staff to do a final review and then come back with those numbers and a better evaluation? It seems to me like we're pulling the 50%, 60% kind of out of the air. Sounds like that's what they do in other communities, but you know, I'm going to depend on our staff to give us the best information there. And as far as the affordable housing side, I'm thinking about it from the perspective of a small individual project. And the individual single-family developments is getting charged. And we're not charging them that second fee because they don't likely have the ability, or they do not have the ability, to actually pursue an affordable housing project on their site. So that's not even a choice, and that's where that initial fee comes in to cover everyone there. And that's important because affordable housing is important. We're way behind on that. The trigger to get to that next level of fees for affordable housing comes when you have the ability to provide affordable housing and you have the choice to do that or not. And if you don't, then you pay the second fee. And that to me makes sense. It's looking at it from the perspective of the smaller project. It's looking out for the smaller project. If we take this away, or tonight we move in that direction, I think we're we're devaluing a smaller project, and it wouldn't be fair at that point to people that don't have the size of a project to be able to even consider affordable housing as a component to the project. So it's recognizing that there's a scaled level that we cross, and there's a need there to support affordable housing, and there's a choice. Do you do it on site, or do you pay additionally into the fund to help make sure that the community is able to support affordable housing projects? So I think it might help to look at it from that perspective.
Excuse me, can I get a word in? When you way back first started with this, are you all right? I have a question for you.
Yeah.
It sounded to me like you said on a single-family home, they're paying an in lieu fee. If I build a single-family home, I don't believe I'm paying it. I'm hoping I misunderstood.
I didn't mean it's the 30% affordable housing charge that goes with every project, as I understand it.
Even if one person builds one home,
correct,
they still pay.
Correct. So that's even across the board. It's for the larger projects where that second affordable housing fee comes in, and I think that makes sense.
I hate to disagree with you, but I think in this respect, we're kind of penalizing people who are willing to put up the money and do larger projects, which we don't have very many of, I'm afraid.
Okay, but to finalize our discussion, we're not exactly penalizing them. What we're doing is we're incentivizing affordable housing, and we're prioritizing affordable housing, which is something, if you look at our numbers, we're far behind on. We have a very severe need for affordable housing units in our community, and this second fee is a component to helping us address that. And we know, you know, we're working on this project on South Main, and funding is a big part of why it hasn't happened yet. And I'm just bringing that up as an example of the need and why I think it wouldn't be prudent for us tonight to, or at any time, to say that we're going to dismiss this second level, which is for the larger projects that have the ability to do it.
I get it. You know, I got it. It took three times. Excuse me. Maybe I could just get clarity. They pay the affordable housing fee for the project, and then they are required to put in affordable housing units. It's about arithmetic. It's about money. We all know it. The developer does their, you know, financial planning, and they see what it will cost to do the affordable housing units and what it will cost to, instead of doing that, pay the fee. It's one or the other. I have my microphone on. Okay. So you're going to pay one or the other, and what Mr. Sergel is asking for is to pay neither, and you know that's not fair. I mean, that's, you know, I've had eye contact with them, and you're not seeing, they're shaking their heads like this. It's they pay the 30 cents for the project, period, plus they're required to put in affordable housing. If they don't want to put in the affordable housing, then they've got to pay.
Twice. They have to pay the amount of what the affordable housing value is, $100,000, $200,000 for the unit, plus the fees on that unit, on the project. They pay twice.
Did I explain it correctly? Well, then we're just
maybe I could go through. Okay.
You know, I've got the picture. The Sturgles know because they're going like this. But that's the way I see it. It's you pay it one way or the other. And there's a, how about if I just make a motion here that we grant a fee reduction for I'll rephrase. I move that. Regarding the project at 1885 Ironwood, permit fees, that they pay 100% of permit fees for the first unit, and for the other units they pay 40%. Would you 60%?
We want 60.
Pay 60% less. For
pay 60% of the fee.
40% less.
40% less.
40% less. I like 50% too, but are we going to get, we're not going to get, then pardon me? You vote, okay. I'm going to withdraw my motion. I move.
Before you do that, could you, in your motion, make sure that you're clear about the plan check, that we're talking about the plan check fees, as well as the...
Do you want to make the motion for me?
No, because I'm not going to vote for it.
Well, then don't tell me how to make my motion.
Well, I'm making a suggestion.
Let me make the motion. Then if you don't like it, then during discussion you can... You know, I can do this. I know I did a very sloppy job the first time. Here I come back for the second time. I'm going to do better. Okay?
Okay. It sounds like you're willing to do that.
Yeah. I move that the plan check fees at 1885 Ironwood go as follows, that they pay 100% of the plan check fees for the first unit, and the remaining units, they pay 50% of plan check fees. Identical units. Is that going to... They are identical units, right?
Half of them.
Half of them are... for the purposes of this, they're identical. Wouldn't say that you wouldn't find any differences in them, but for the purposes of Plan Jack, for in your discussion, I would say identical.
And regarding the affordable housing fees, that we leave that as staff is charged.
I'll second that.
I mixed up my motion? I do. It seemed appropriate to me. It's one request for two different things. I made one motion for the two items that we've been discussing.
Okay.
Discussion.
By our hearing that happened today at the Inn at Morro Bay, but it will be continued is the most important thing to know. That hearing will be continued to Monday, the 20th. That's next Monday. Also at the Inn at Morro Bay, it appears that they will have another interactive Skype session starting most likely in the morning. But please, if you're interested, check out the City of Morro Bay's homepage on the website, because we will be updating that with new information and details about this extended hearing for the seismic study for Diablo Canyon.
George.
Yes, I want to ask for a reconsideration on the last item we talked about before the break, D1.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
I'll second the motion. Discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1. George.
I believe that myself personally, I was a little confused on this thing. I thought we were actually waiving because he's already paid once into this housing lieu fee. So I was gonna, a little bit mixed up on that one. I thought we were waiving that thing. I do believe that we are actually double dipping into this man's pocket, and we should be grateful that he's actually come to our town and put such a good project together, and we need to encourage things like this. And I really like to make this maybe even further than this, that it's actually a rule that we don't punish these people like this, because this is definitely double dipping for them.
Anybody want to comment on this? Nancy?
I agree with George, and I think we have a motion to that effect soon.
I would invite you to make the motion. I'd invite George to make the motion. How about if I am the best. Could I hear a motion from George stating regarding the 1885 Ironwood, that A, the permit fees for the first unit be paid at 100% and the remaining at 50%, and B, that the second affordable housing in lieu fee be rescinded.
I second that motion.
No, you say so moved. You say
so moved.
Second.
Discussion.
Get it down.
Yes,
yet.
In your motion, you said that the first unit be charged at 100% and all the other units be charged at 50%. That's vague. It doesn't
The identical
rooms. Point out that there is, you're speaking to the duplicate plan check review units, not the entire 14 units.
Anybody else?
Yes. I just, for clarification then on that in lieu, is that we are not waiving all the fees. We are not charging the second fee.
Correct. Is that how you understand it? What is the difference in
we're
money?
Not charging the difference.
Which one's the second one?
Well, the first one is the 30 cents per square foot, correct?
The what I would suggest is, if you're going to waive the affordable housing fees, if I may, that you waive the 30 cents per square foot one, because the requirement to provide affordable housing is required by the housing element.
So I'm going to suggest you amend your motion for waiving the 30 cents per square foot affordable housing fee.
So moved.
So amended.
So amended? Now we got
seconded.
A new one.
Seconded.
Okay. Any further discussion? Yes, Noah?
Yeah. I'm again going to point out that we have no numbers or information about what financially this means to the affordable housing funds. And that this fee structure and those fees are set up and have been respected and paid by projects in the past. And right now, with this case-by-case basis method, we're setting a precedent that doesn't respect what other people have had to pay. So I think this is a messy approach to this whole process.
Any other comments?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I will add that, as I had said earlier, I will be asking for a consideration to address that for future projects, so that we are proactive and not reactive, and that we can support the building and housing industry in this community. Because I will say, at that project, I've seen more people, contractors, local workers working in the last month that I've seen in the last year. So I couldn't be happier about that. And I think the city attorney is wanting to add something.
Rob, yes, would you like to speak?
Just from procedural.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1. B1, who's handling this? Me? You? Rob. B1, we haven't done it, have we? We have to do our little process. Okay, I will state this then. B1 has been pulled because there was an error in the noticing. We need to open the hearing item, which I've just done by announcing B1. We don't have to open it to the public?
No, you'll do that at your next hearing.
And so we will continue this hearing until August 28th, 2012. Have I satisfied the legal requirements? Thank you very much. D2. Joe.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. D2 is the forwarding of our master planning process for the Concept C. Concept C for the Northern Embarcadero Implementation Plan incorporates Coleman Park as well as the Target Rock area. And I gave you some background in your staff report on how we led up to accepting Concept C, which was basically consensus from the Harbor Advisory Board as well as the Recreation Parks Commissioners, and then was presented to Council in 08 and approved in concept form. Since then, the two projects, and I say two because Concept C basically has two elements in it. It's a harbor boating element as well as a recreational element. The harbor element, I'm sorry I don't have pictures for you this evening. It was definitely an error on staff's part. I know that there's been a multitude of pictures and diagrams and maps out there. And I was hoping that you could pull from your archives if you needed to. But the harbor boating facilities would be outlined as a haul-out station, which is just south of Mother's Beach, as well as the boat repair and dry storage, which was along the Embarcadero Dirt Extended. The recreational elements within Concept C would be the areas known as Coleman Park, as well as the area known as Target Rock area. And council has directed staff to review the Morro Rock parking lot to incorporate that into the Concept C, the Northern Embarcadero Implementation Plan. And basically, it was a diagram or a specific plan that was outlined by the Woodies. And the Woodies plan had several recreational elements within the plan. There was volleyball courts and picnic areas and play areas and whatnot. So staff took this plan to the advisory boards as directed, Recreation Parks Commission, the Harbor Advisory Board, as well as the Public Works Advisory Board. Those motions are in your staff report as well. Basically, the consensus was that the advisory boards was to incorporate the Woody's plan, or if you would, the Morro Rock parking lot within Concept C. And for the most part, advisory boards liked certain elements of the plan that was presented, and some of them did not like some of the plan. So there was a consensus that we liked the idea of putting the Rock parking lot into the Concept Plan C as far as the master planning process, but not entirely as it was displayed in the Woody's plan. So they were willing to move forward with modifications that would be presented through public consensus, through workshops, and so forth. And so that's where we're at as far as the master planning. In front of you today is that you have a consensus from your advisory boards that they want the Rock parking lot into our Concept C master planning process. We want to move forward with that process, and we would want you to basically approve and direct staff to continue with the master planning process to include Coleman Park, Target Rock area, as well as the Rock parking lot. We've given you an outline of the proposal from RRM that outlines basically the approach that we would be recommending to get a consensus from the public and the stakeholders within this process. Pardon me. I want to remind you that we had talked about several other elements within this plan. Number one being the Fisherman's Family Sculptures. They are obviously in the makes right now, and they were, from what I hear, still on schedule for December of this year. And so as they come through, we would be looking at doing some detailed plans as far as the site development out at Target Rock, the most, I would say, southerly west corner, if you will, of city proper. We have proposed six different plans for the Target Rock, so we'll be using those plans as well as the detailed plans from the Woodies as information to get the process in public venue and get consensus. So these are wouldn't be taken in their totalitary form, but they would be taken as concept plans and ideas in which the groups that meet could evaluate and review and make comment on. That concludes my report.
Questions for Joe? Noah?
Yeah, okay. A couple questions. The first is just to confirm, we're talking about, with this master planning process, all of these different elements and areas to be included in that, including the boating facilities.
No, we're not. This park master planning is a recreational element within Concept C. We have staff. We are not dealing with the haul-out area, boat haul-out, or the boat repair, or the boat storage. Those elements are right next to the south side of Mother's Beach and on the dirt extended. Coleman Park is along Coleman Drive, and Target Rock is obviously at the end of Coleman Drive and so forth. So the recreational elements within the concept plan that's been approved are all west of Mother's Beach, if you will, and the boating facilities, as they're outlined, would be along the Embarcadero.
So the boating facilities aren't included in this process?
The boating facilities are not included in this park master planning process.
And this is a separate subject, but I'm curious, how will the vision and plan for those boating facilities eventually be pursued?
That's something that we've kind of separated our efforts and staff and allowing Harbor to venture down into their boating environment, if you will, and seek out their permits and their development.
So we could be assured that at some point there will be a public process for that side.
I would imagine so. We didn't want to hang them up, and they didn't want to hang us up. And so there's a couple of different processes that we go through as far as park planning processes, and that's what we've given you that outline as the 08 RPC has adopted. So there's several steps that we've got to take with the park master planning separate from the harbor boating facilities.
Okay. And this, as proposed, does include the Embarcadero extended to the plans and funded bridge over Morro Creek.
Concept C identifies that, but that particular element would not be part of our park master planning. Okay, that is, you're talking about a public.
Why wouldn't we include that in this process?
Because that project is more of a transportation project as opposed to a parks master planning process.
Well, it's being discussed as a extension of the Harbor Walk, so
you're arguing with it.
You've approved the concept plan on as its whole, and it does identify that, and possibly Director Leivick could make comment on that Harbor Walk project.
Yeah, because I'm wondering why wouldn't we include that as we go through this process, or is it already taken care of?
I think it's a better defined project. It's a linear project. The pathway is already well defined, and we've done preliminary design and have funding in place for that. I don't know that we need to go backwards to include it in the master planning process to look at an alignment for it.
You're talking about the extension of
the extension and the bridge, yes.
So you feel confident that we have had we have a good concept there. I've seen some plans preliminary from RRM,
yes,
regarding that. So, and it will be compatible with whatever comes out of this master plan.
Correct.
Process. How do we make sure of that?
Well, do we already have a plan, or are we going to go through a dynamic public process that develops a plan that could change and be different than what we've seen?
The walk and the bridge has nothing to do with this thing. You're getting
that's
and you're arguing with staff, and it's kind of like the flip side of what you were telling me on an earlier thing that, you know, staff.
We're talking about visioning here. We're not talking about technical details. So I'm just making sure that as we go forward, we're coming up with a vision that encompasses the whole area. Which
you asked him a question. Is this that he said yes? And then you've questioned that. How do we know? You're asking.
I would like to know how would that future establishment of that pathway to the bridge be compatible with a plan here? That's a legitimate question. Because we don't
planning commission for public input on that. I don't view it as that sophisticated of a project as with the rest of the park features that we're just going to use like materials and like construction.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I was asking a question that I've actually been asked myself for the public's information. I think it speaks to the idea that we do have an existing Harbor Walk and amazing natural assets that all of this is going to be built out of, and so it should actually complement each other. And I just wanted the assurance that there's room for it all to work together, which is important, and that's what visioning is about. So forgive me. The other thing that I'm concerned about and would like to discuss more is we obviously have here a number of $60,000 to $75,000 to complete the master planning process, and I was happy to see in this proposal from RRM what I consider to be a fairly strong public participation process, which I think is important because of the sensitivity that our community has about the area. There's a strong regard for this area, and people have a lot of different perspectives about the future of the Rock and Coleman Park and Target Rock area and parking at the Rock area there. So I was happy to see that there would appear to be an opportunity for many people in the public to get involved and to provide their input, because as I understand it, we have concepts right now, and I've heard from all of the different advisory boards and many people that I've talked to in the public strong concerns about different elements. Everyone has their own opinions about it, but we need to be sure that we can carry this out on our in a way that guarantees those issues are going to be addressed. A couple of things that I saw lacking in this proposal is there's this day-long workshop, the idea generation workshop, where someone would have to basically participate for an entire day, and then there's a couple of other workshops and the advisory board hearings, but I was wondering if there's the opportunity to include some sort of community surveys in this, some outreach surveys in this, to make sure that someone that's either not paying attention at all and would at least get the ability to receive something in the mail would be able to participate, or just someone that doesn't have time to attend any of these public meetings. Is that something that we could include?
I don't see a reason why we couldn't include some kind of a proxy participation by citizens who wanted to send in a letter, or if they wanted to do a survey online. It was certainly something we could set up, whether it's with RRM or with some in-house staff resources. We certainly can review that.
Okay. And then to follow up on my last question or concern is the funding itself. Obviously, we have a lot of needs throughout the community. Visioning and planning is really important, because it sets us up to go out and receive grants and to identify alternative funds to actually implement these visions. But at the same time, $60,000 to $70,000 is quite a bit more than what we have existing in the Park and Lou Fund. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about the $20,000 that we have in the Park and Lou Fund, and you know, what would appear to be a situation where we probably have other parks and other needs that are more pressing, more near-term, such as just the infrastructure of our parks and maybe some more modest improvements to some of our parks. So how would you suggest we could balance the need to plan and have a vision and to do the short-term maintenance and upkeep with those funds?
Well, currently we do have an operating budget that we try to expend fully on park maintenance and operations. And so we take it very seriously. We try to expend every resource we have available, that you make available to us throughout the fiscal year. We do have park and lieu fees that we've used for different projects. We're currently seeking some state funding to do some more park enhancements. Then in tune of about $70,000, we're looking to do some enhancements at Anchor Memorial, at City Park, and I believe we also have Centennial on there as well. So some high traffic areas that are very visible by tourists, heavily used by locals, is something that we definitely want to continue to support. This master planning process is something that I think is ready. A couple of years ago, we did not have the resources. Right now, we've got $20,000 in park and lieu funds. We're hoping, and we see a few subdivisions out there on the horizon that may come through fruition here in the next year or two, but there's nothing that I can really hang my hat on. Subdivision motion that staff would certainly would recommend.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I think we ought to use the economic development plan money. Sticks in my claw.
We didn't know.
I just thought I'd clarify it. You know, all this thing was to start with, we work with a concept plan, and then everybody's been kind of kicking around here. Well, the volleyball park's in the shade, and the roundabout thing isn't wide enough, and all that. You know, what we need is just to get the direct staff to move ahead on this thing and start to work in that way. And that's what I recommend anyway, to get moving on this. We need some engineers out there to shoot the grades. You know, there isn't anything anything around the Woodies, and we all looked into trying to find anything like that, and there isn't anything like that, and it needs to be done, and then we can move ahead. So I just recommend that staff just move ahead on this right now.
Ms. Johnson.
My turn. I love your proposal. I think it's beautiful, and I would like to see it go to the implementation level. My only concern is the difference of $40,000 to $60,000 that it would cost based on what you have now. I mean, you have $20,000, it's going to cost $60,000 to $75,000. What I would like to see happen is maybe we could approve this tonight with the caveat that you wait to implement it when you actually have the money available. Would that work for you, Mr. Woods?
That would certainly work for me.
Thank you.
I echo the comments from my fellow council member Johnson. I believe it's a great plan, but we don't have the funding, and I would love to see it go forward when we have the funding available. I don't think the community wants to see us spend more money we don't have on studies and workshops to have it sit there in limbo for the next few years again, waiting for funding for the project. So I would like to wait till we have the money.
And I would add that I would think that you could get a figure nailed down. You know, I was kind of curious why just RRM? It seems like it was given to RRM and then RRM, and there it is. Shouldn't this be put out to bid, and shouldn't we know what it's going to cost? I'm not crazy about vague figures like $60,000 to $75,000, because there's $15,000 difference there. I mean, how do you budget that? And how come RRM got it? I understand that they did the earlier work, but that doesn't matter. This is kind of anybody, if it's not RRM, could take their work and build on it. So those two things bother me, but I don't think it's going to matter tonight. If funding, that slows it down, that could be, who knows when that money happens, a couple of years.
And you got to start somewhere.
Well, Nancy, it's your idea, and so why don't you make the motion?
Let me make a motion.
Okay.
We move forward to the master planning of the Northern Embarcadero area, including Coleman Park, Target Rock, and the Morro Rock parking lot, and wait for implementation until funds are available for this part of the project.
Second.
I guess I'm just churning. I guess I'm okay with that, because implementation would mean that we would return to the questions that I just had, nailing down what it's going to cost, and probably 2 years from now it's going to cost more, and why others haven't been given the opportunity to bid on it. This is a total single purveyor kind of deal here that doesn't feel in the public's best interest to me.
Can I ask a question? How many people are really in this business of doing this besides these people? I know I talked to some people today, and they said, oh, no, we couldn't do that. So I just wonder how many people.
But as far as the number of firms, we haven't gone out there and solicited countywide nor northern or central coastwide, if you will, which we've had firms from Santa Maria area and Santa Barbara areas come through for bigger projects. So they're out there. Not every smaller firm in this county can produce this kind of work, but there are certainly more than a handful that we could solicit bids from.
Mary Yates.
Yes.
May I make one short comment?
You may.
This is a professional services contract, so it's not required to go out to bid. Certainly, when we bring it back to you, when funding is available, we can certainly put it out to an RFP. That's something we can do. There is a little bit of a benefit to using a firm we've used before, such as RRM. They've done some baseline work for us, and we're sure about their quality of work, but certainly it can go out to bid if that's the council's desire when the funding's available, and we're hoping the funding is available sooner than 2 years. That's our positive thought for the day.
Cool.
And if I can, I like this motion too because it leaves flexibility to staff not only to use the park and lieu funds but grant other alternative funding sources that may come along.
And then we'll take a vote. I will just say, Joe, with total respect, you've heard me say this kind of thing before more than once, that when I hear a figure of 60 to 75,000, you know what I hear? 75,000. That's always the case, or more. So I just, a little editorial, thank you for letting me say that. Okay, ready? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. D3. Rob.
Good evening again, Mr. Mayor, City Council. This item was brought to the City Council by Councilperson League regarding parking on Embarcadero between Pacific and Beach Streets. Just want to review some of the past studies that have been done on parking going back to 1993. The city, in conjunction with the State Coastal Conservancy, did a parking feasibility study for the Embarcadero waterfront. I did put ranges in there, so parking structure was estimated, if I update those costs to kind of today's cost, at up to $11 million, and that would garner require parking fees of about $35 a day to pay that debt service and operational costs. Back in 2007, the city contracted with TPG to do a comprehensive evaluation of downtown and Embarcadero parking needs. In summary, the major conclusion was there's not a parking problem in Morro Bay. There are certain isolated times where it's difficult to find a convenient parking space, but they concluded that there's ample parking within a two-block walk to your location. Their underlying presumption is rather than building a parking structure, there may be some more efficient ways to achieve better parking efficiency. Those items were reviewed by the various advisory bodies and brought forward in September 2007 to a joint planning commission and city council meeting where they looked at signage, public information, shared parking, employee parking, expanded trolley service, delivery truck parking, angled parking, and some other issues. Council brought that back. We brought that back to council, or the then staff brought that back to council in October 2007, and were directed to purchase directional signage, which is now in place, add the expanded Embarcadero trolley service, and provide a web-based parking map. I don't believe the parking map was ever completed by the promotions committee, but parking information is currently shown on the city's trolley map, and that map is available on the city's website. Some of the options for your consideration may be to direct staff to resurvey parking availability. It may have changed in the last 5 years, and to report that back to council. I think we have still some time before the last major holiday this year to do that. Another item for consideration, encourage additional time parking to encourage turnover. You may want to look at a paid parking program, one of the recommendations from the 93 study, and not one that probably ready to recommend. They were looking to keep that, but they wanted to potentially expand that to the city lot. That concludes my brief summary of the some of the parking history in the city of Morro Bay related to the Embarcadero. Thank you.
It was a fabulous report, Rob. You know, I'm going to suggest that we've got... How are we doing on the Dynergy lot, Rob?
Trying to get their signature. Dana's been following up on it on a regular basis. Today I asked her to do it again, to put in the call and the email to Dynergy on where the signatures are on it.
Could we say we're close?
Just waiting for a signature.
You know, I think once we... Oh, thank you. I think once we get that open, that's going to change the complexion of parking down there. Subject to hearing from the others, I'm going to suggest that we hold off on any decisions regarding parking and see how that goes. That's going to be a couple hundred extra spaces. I was talking to George today. We were talking about, you know, beefing up the trolley, but that's down the road. I think that's going to have a positive impact. So that's where I'm at. Who wants to go next? George.
On that signature, do you think we could bring in the Godfather and get that done?
Yeah, that's what you waited for.
You know, I was up, took a little trip, and I was up in through a town in Oregon there, and I was totally impressed. There wasn't, they have like a same thing along the beach. They have the same thing as in Embarcadero. It's about the same length and everything. And no parking on the streets. All the parking was, they had a nice thing about that. They had parking in behind their buildings, and which we don't, we run up against a mountain there. But it was loaded with people just walking up and down, and I was really impressed with that, because I have talked about that before, about, you know, along the one side there of the Embarcadero, that we take away the parking and widen the sidewalks and make it more friendly. And the more I looked at that, and I thought about Morro Bay, and I thought, boy, if we could just get the cars off of that short area on the Embarcadero there and get them parked in another place, it would be really wonderful, because it just opens up the shops and it opens up the traffic of walking. And the people just have a different attitude when they're walking along, with a nice walking space and not all crowded up. And I think this could work in Morro Bay. I really give some different thoughts about the parking. And yes, I'd like to see us get that open area over there by the power plant and see how that affects. Because I notice a lot of people, they'll park up in that area up where we are, and they'll walk clear down to the middle of the Embarcadero. So they don't mind. It's such a pleasant walk that people don't mind that walk. Maybe we could take a different look at how we want the cars to be parked along that area there. Let's get that power plant open thing up. I'd like to see staff conscientiously look at maybe a area where we could put a small parking garage or something. But kind of, I like to get it off the Embarcadero now. Before I thought, well, that parking lot we got now, maybe make it. But it just, it doesn't set with me very well anymore. I like to get it off the area. So anyway, I'd like to see us start looking for something. We'll open up the parking area of the power plant as soon as we possibly can. Let's not give up on the long range parking. And anybody that says that we don't have a parking problem is crazy, because we do. But I think if we took away the parking we might have a better situation.
Nancy.
Well said, George. My all-time favorite has always been just to close the Embarcadero to cars. I was thinking about maybe running golf carts back and forth for people who couldn't walk it. You know, basically, we really can't do anything, I don't think, until we know what's going to happen with Dynegy, until we get the signature. Then if we could put people in that parking lot and make them walk or ferry them or whatever.
Main Street and Beach right now, where the old gas station used to be, you could have the trolley run right by and pick them up.
There you go.
It's a beautiful lot for parking. Looks good. I think, based on this report, the only things that I would say is I think a lot of the signs came down and were supposed to go back up for the timed parking. Did they ever go back up for the two-hour or four-hour parking that were down there? They were supposed to get repainted and put back up, Mr. Leibick?
I don't believe those have gone back up yet.
So I think that's kind of a problem. Yeah.
No, they have, the maintenance is kind of short-staffed, so they haven't had a chance to put those back up yet.
Yeah. That's way short-staffed because they've been down for a long time. So perhaps that would alleviate some of the problem if we actually had those restricted signs back up for the two-hour and four-hour in front of those businesses to allow better flow. And also, I think there you did some more red zones down there, sections. Was that part of a requirement? I know some of those blocks have more red areas on them.
Yes, so there was some minimum red that was required. We're a little bit short on our red zones, so we went to the state minimums for red, and when we remarked those areas.
So that's a minimum we can do?
Correct.
I heard comments from people about it that couldn't park where they parked before. So really, to me, I would just be getting those signs back up, and hopefully that'll help move some of the traffic.
Let me just respond to that, and I'll give it to you, Noah. I would ask that if you want to bring the signs back, that it comes back to us. I mean, I have been one of those guys behind the scenes. You remember the visual pollution we had down there with those signs. There was two signs on every light pole, and we didn't enforce it. I don't think that it's going to make people move. So I would ask respectfully that staff doesn't take what you just said as a direction and be putting those signs up, that if you want to have that discussion, we bring it back up here.
Well, then why did they take it as a direction from you to take them down and not put them back up without it coming to us? I'm respectfully asking, Bill. I mean, it didn't come to us to afford us the opportunity to ask them
That's fair enough. They came down to paint the light poles, and then I admit, I was, no direction, but I'll buy that, and I'll take that criticism. Noah.
Okay. A couple questions here before I comment on the other questions. One, there's the mention of the delivery truck restrictions, because that is identified here as one of the needs, and I did want to hear from the city attorney as to why that wouldn't be possible, because as far as I'm aware, there are other communities in the county that have some restrictions on delivery truck times, mostly. But
absolutely we can. It's just that we've never gone there before or for the enforcement. But we can restrict delivery times and double parking.
So,
not necessary delivery times, but for double parking, we could begin to enforce that, and that would send them into the time frames we're looking for.
So that sounds like a fairly low cost way to start to address that need. Go ahead, Ms. Borger.
We brought this just not too long ago, and it came through the Harbor Advisory Board first, and there was an outcry from all the merchants on the Embarcadero, which is exactly what you'll get based on this comment, about not restricting their vendors' delivery times down there. Outcry. Absolutely. They were signing sheets and turning them in to just not do it. So just forewarning, it's been brought up probably a year ago. It came to the Harbor Advisory Board and started there, and every time it's come, the merchants have complained about it.
I just wanted to follow up on what Ms. Borger just said. It has been before Planning Commission in the past, and A couple of things. That exactly what she said is so true. It brought out the business owners down there in droves, especially the restaurants. The other thing is, we, whether we like it or not, kind of have to admit that we're a small fish in a big pond. You know, maybe a big city like San Luis or Paso Robles can say you can only do it during these hours. We're kind of at the end of that food chain, you know, and they're going to get here when they're going to get here. And I'm sorry, that's just the way it is, and I've heard it over and over again from business owners.
Well, I can understand that, but every time I'm down on the Embarcadero and watch a delivery truck clog up prime time traffic and create havoc, safety issues and discomfort on in every component of the driving and pedestrian street experience. To me, I totally agree with you. I think there are some really exciting options that would be interesting to look at and potentially maybe utilize a pilot type of a approach to see how it work. Know that we're going to go light on the initial investments and try to utilize methods that give us that ability to experiment, and if it's not quite working, then pull back and maybe adjust. But in talking with Mr. Livick earlier, I think there are some options for us, and I'd like to see us, I'd support the idea of going forward with starting to evaluate, well, first it sounds like to evaluate the existing conditions a little more. And I know Mr. Livick's feels confident that that could happen through the remainder of summer, updating the potential of having the Dynegy parking lot available, the new trolley routes, and seeing what the conditions are at the current date, and then to come forward with some ideas. And that could include expansion of a promenade, expanding the parking or the sidewalk, some of these things that you had mentioned, George. And I would say, potential for one way. I would hope that the delivery truck restrictions would be included in that conversation. It's a conversation. It doesn't mean that we're going to implement these ideas, but that would definitely need to involve the stakeholders. And I think there's some options there to work with the chamber. This would seem like somewhat of an economic development discussion. Obviously, the business forum would be an excellent place for the public services departments to actually present some of these ideas in a preliminary way and move forward with an idea that we can improve the situation. So I'm very supportive of this, and I'm glad you brought it forward, Mr. Lee.
Well, I'm just going to take exception with a couple of things you said, Noah, that, you know, that these trucks are, your word, creating havoc down there. You know, I worked down there for 13 years, 7 days a week, and, boy, I've come up behind those trucks like hundreds of times, and, you know, sometimes it's taken me 60 seconds I had to wait before I get around it. That's when it's really busy. It's a logistical problem. If you're, say, the Galley restaurant, which is getting these deliveries all, maybe that's a bad one because they go in the street end. Let's say Otter Rock. You know, where are they going to get their deliveries? We can't dictate times. I mean, we've gotten that message. I mean, some of these fish guys come from San Francisco. They're working, you know, down the coast. They're here when they're here. You know, I was at Harbor Advisory Board when that was discussed, and what they kind of came to the conclusion was that it's not a problem. I'm not saying that it can't be discussed. I wanted to balance out your statements of that it's creating so much problems down there, and that, from my view, and I didn't have a restaurant, but I had to traverse that thing every day, multiple times. You know, it just wasn't that big a deal.
Can I comment briefly? I think you're a reasonable community member. And you come into that scenario and you do wait and you're very cautious moving around, but all too often it's someone from out of town or someone in a hurry, and when that delivery truck is there, you know, people are not waiting for a crosswalk. And there are times when people are walking out from behind a delivery truck, and those scenarios are really troublesome. So I don't want to get into this debate now because I don't think this is the time. It's something to discuss, and I think there might be some options that don't require strict restrictions on the deliveries, but creating the opportunity for the deliveries to happen, you know, block by block in a way that allows for parking and traffic flow. And these are the things that I think we need to explore. So I just wanted to say that.
Farron, you can have the last word on that.
Could I have a word on that one, too?
You may.
That's kind of why I like my idea about not having any parking there on the water side, because that would allow the trucks to just slide over and be almost completely out of the traffic way to delivery. So that would work real well with the trucks, and traffic could still... I don't really want to stop the traffic at all, or one-way traffic, just move the traffic up and down, but they move up and down both ways. But there's... I've measured that thing off, and you can widen the sidewalk there and still have room to pull a truck over, and there's still a lot of safe room to go around it. So that's one of the reasons I like to stop the parking with her on the waterfront side.
Would you guys like an opportunity?
Oh, that's all great. They're great. Just, you know, we've talked about this before.
It's sidewalk. They're doing pilot low-cost concepts to explore the ideas and see what could work. And I think that's possible here. And the other interesting thing, too, to bring up, we have a challenge with parking at times on the Embarcadero, and definitely in some areas, extreme challenges. But then we have places like Market Street and some of the other feeder streets where we'd like to see more people spending time and parking. And I think some of these ideas could help encourage people to utilize places like Market Street and Lower Boulevard and so on, and pick up the traffic in those areas and create a win situation. So I hope that we do pursue this and try to identify some rooms for opportunity.
Great. We good? You can. We good on this? D4, Nancy.
What?
We're done.
What sort of direction are we providing it?
Well,
I
thought we were
going to
let the parking lot open up and see it. And
yeah, we'll
talk some more.
Okay, I'll say something. Let's. We're going to look like we're going to get that parking lot open up pretty quick, right, Rob? So
next week, you promise, Rob?
Right. Yeah. Well, we already can bring in the Godfather. We got it. And anyway, how about saying let's table this thing for, or not tables, don't use that word. Don't use that word. No, I don't want to do that anymore. Anyway, let's put out for about 2 months, come back with this and take a look and see how that has been affecting the area down there. But in the meantime, let's start looking for alternatives of how to park down there. What do you think about that? Give it a couple of months.
Who's going to look for alternatives? You?
No, Andrea.
In her spare time.
Well, that's her job.
We have to pay for her time, you know.
Can I ask Mr. Livick, in our conversations beforehand, it sounded like tell us if this isn't possible, but it sounded like an update of the current conditions towards the end of the summer was possible and wouldn't displace other priorities. Basically a snapshot of what it looks like now with the Dynegy parking lot and the new trolley routes and so on. Am I correct in understanding that?
Yes. We would look to see how the Dynegy lot affected parking in the Embarcadero, and we could report that back to City Council. I'd also want to investigate to see if there's still the possibility for T funds for the transportation enhancement funds for these streetscaping type projects that they're even with the new Transportation Act highway bill, there may be some of that money left to talk with SLOCOG and see if we can pull a little bit of money out of that
As far as the sidewalk project that George is talking about, there, you know, we can wait. There's funding for that. They love funding stuff like that.
Yeah.
They did all of Arroyo Grande's downtown and the bulb outs and all that. So I think that we could get funding for that with patience. And maybe we could get initial funding like we did with the bridge. You know, got a little for the design and boom, before it was done. So that is doable with patience. Noah, did you have something else?
Yeah, thank you. So when you would come back with that update, would it be possible to include, without a lot of effort, to include a general, it'd basically be kind of refining some of these suggestions and going along the line of Mr. League's streetscape improvement concept and perhaps suggesting from your perspective as staff what avenues we might pursue and which pilot-type concepts would be worthwhile to explore further?
We can work on, based on the discussion that I heard from the dais, winnowing down these lists and coming back with maybe a little bit, some ideas a little bit further fleshed out to present to council.
That sounds great.
Yeah, we got to put this to bed.
To me, it's put to bed.
Okay.
We're done. Thank you, Nancy. D4 Nancy.
Yes. D4. I think it's safe to guess that you've all read your staff report, so you know what it says. This is the discussion on the need of a volunteer community services coordinator. And this is something I brought up, and thank you, Andrea, for getting this on the agenda. I have a couple of questions to start the discussion, and maybe you will have some others. I notice in the recommendation that they're recommending we forward this issue to the Recreation and Park. She wanted to know about a veteran support group for him, and I at that point didn't know who to send her to. But if we had a community liaison services coordinator who could, I could say, you know, here's his card or her card, go talk to this person, they know when, what these services are. So that's basically what I'm hoping we can work out quickly tonight.
I would be looking to you as the proposer of this, pardon my grape in my mouth.
Go ahead.
That all these questions you just posed should come from you. I think that the volunteer should be appointed by whoever, it should be done this way and this way and this way. You're kind of throwing it out there.
Well, that's what I wanted, some feedback to see if you even think this is an all right idea, if you want me to proceed with answering some of these questions and bring it back. I can do that.
Cool.
Is that cool with everybody?
But, you know,
does anybody have any other questions that you would like addressed?
Noah?
Well, I'm very interested in this, and there is some efforts to try to address this very thing that you're describing here. And I'm finding myself interested in the idea of this being, I guess, formally established as a volunteer position through the city process, which would bring benefits. It could also bring challenges. So that would be a really key question for me is, are we better off moving forward with this as a part of within the city, or if it comes from the nonprofit community outside of the government but working closely with the government?
I think we need to provide direction, and I think whoever gets this position needs to have governmental approval so that they will have access to the resources that they need to provide information to people. I know we have a lot of wonderful volunteer groups in our city, yet things kind of, I mean, there's a bit of information here and a bit over there, and this is one person who with our authority could then help pull that together, and I'm guessing probably work out of the senior center. But those are things that we need to fine tune. But I think we definitely need our stamp of approval, if that's what, the way you want to put it, you know, so that it's a very official situation.
I would support you coming back with recommendations, you know, get together with Andrea and whoever.
We can do that.
And come back with recommendations.
Okay.
I'd ask, too, that you keep me involved in that discussion because I think there are some things that I that are happening that might actually play right into this and be really helpful in answering those questions that you're posing.
Well, maybe you and Andrea and I can meet and move forward. Is that all right with you?
That's fine. Would the council anticipate it then going to the Recreation and Parks Commission or just getting that involvement? Because I was going to say, if you're planning on swimming it to them as well, can we start there so we skip that extra step? But if you're going to keep it at council, then certainly willing to meet. And another alternative might be housing this person in with the chamber if the chamber ends up in one of our city facilities. So I think there's some options.
I think Nancy threw out a lot of questions in her opening that wouldn't be fair to go to Parks and Rec and just throw the same questions out.
No.
You know, you guys get together, the three of you,
and bring it back.
Should it be with the chamber? Should it be with the church? Should it be with the vets? I mean, should it be with the city? Should it be with the council? You know, hash this out and come up with what you think, and then I would think bring it back, at least have us send it off with a like voice, that if you do that before we've had that, one more discussion, it could be spinning their wheels. So I would think that I would recommend that's the way to go. Bring it back after you've had your deal, put it all, here's what I think it should be, here's how it should work, here's it, boom, 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 boom. We go, yes, then it goes off.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Okay. D5. Jamie Boucher. Says you. You get it.
This item is for your designation of your voting delegate at the California League of Cities 2012 meeting. Historically, all you've done is assign the delegate at these meetings. You have not instructed that person on which to vote on the resolutions, just as you don't say for SLOCOG or the APCD. So tonight it's really just to pick the delegate. If you did want to instruct him on the five resolutions that will be at the league, then I would suggest we do bring that back, because I don't think it was noticed to also give the resolutions that authority for you tonight. So we assumed all you were going to do as you've done.
The past few years, the council hasn't had a representative, so we had appointed the city attorney, who I believe will also be attending, so perhaps he could be the alternative.
He is an alternative.
Well, I think he's an alternative. Maybe we should check with the city attorney and be sure that's all right with him.
Okay, I move that Nancy Johnson be the official council league voting delegate and that Rob Schultz be her alternate. Discussion?
Yes, I would ask that you include a component that requires her to have a vegetarian lunch.
I
didn't know I got to eat.
That she include a steak and seafood lunch. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you for going, Nancy. Oh, you're going to have a blast. There's so much fun. Okay. Are we at the end?
Yes.
Declaration of future agenda items. Carla.
I'd like to ask to bring the master fee schedule back to have a consideration of adding secondary or identical projects under the fee schedule for plan check.
Sure.
And you want me to reword that?
Yeah, a little more clarity for
that. Agendize the looking at the master fee schedule to include identical projects and the fees that they are charged under planning and building. Is that close?
It's close enough.
Okay.
It's close enough. Yeah, I'm going to support this. Are you going to support it?
Yes, I'll support it.
And I support you getting together with Andrea and
Rob,
and we'll try and bring it back.
And then can I ask two questions of the city manager? Can I not?
Well, it's 8:45. Okay. Two hours left.
Stop it. I'd just like to know, we're getting a lot of paving done, and so I'm wondering if she could tell us where we might be or when we're going to be in the process of an RFP to continue that paving based on this year's funding.
Well, I might defer to Mr. Livick. We haven't talked about this lately, so I'll see if he's got that idea or whether we need to bring that back to council. Probably yes.
We are currently working with the contract that's under contract to negotiate the final liquidated damages on this contract. We've kind of held out a carrot based on our previous discussions that there could be some future work. Based on those discussions, I would anticipate within the next couple weeks we would have an indication whether they are going to be able to perform for future work or whether we would go out to bid for future work. Unfortunately, it's gone well in the last few weeks, but the first bit of this project does not give me a whole lot of confidence in this contractor. So we'll see how this slurrying performs. They perform this, whether they're able to get the notifications out correctly, and because there will be some, there will be more impact with this phase of it than it's been on the previous phases of the work. So, you know.
So we could potentially coordinate the RFP so that there would be obviously an opportunity for them to stay here mobilized if they were the bidder, since they
yes,
would already
we,
be here.
We could do it in a couple different ways. We could take this out. It wouldn't be an RFP.
Okay.
We would go through a full bid process,
okay.
It would take long enough that they would demobilize and have to come back. Or we could do it as a change order to this existing contract. That's one of the items
here
that we had talked about before to keep them here. So that, and we didn't have to pay those remobilization costs.
Why does why would the bid process take longer than when they would be demobilized if they're not finishing for another month or two?
It might not.
Okay.
It might not. Sorry, I'm not thinking as clear as I normally would.
That brings
the illness is not an excuse.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
May I ask him another question about
Please. This?
I've seen them dig lots of nice big deep holes and then fill them in. My question is, I understand from, I guess, one of the workers that they're not going to come back and slurry seal those streets until September. Is that the case? Because
let me I just got a schedule today, so hold on just a second.
Good thing you have your iPad with you.
Good thing I do, yeah.
That'll be my next.
And Jamie's got it. We got to go collect it. I haven't gotten mine yet. You probably have to.
Starting with chip sealing on Friday, August 17th. And then, which is this coming Friday, slurry sealing on the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, doing temporary striping. Then they would come back after Labor Day to do the commercial streets that we left out. So there may be an opportunity to do a bid in that time that they would be able to bid on. I'll work with our project manager and talk with the city attorney about the best way to approach that.
So while I don't even begin to pretend to understand the difference between chip sealing and slurry sealing, that will start Friday on the streets that...
Correct. So chip sealing is dump oil, chip on top of it, sweep it up after they get done, and so they add some. It's the county does a big chip sealing program. I don't know if you've driven around the unincorporated area. Slurry sealing is oil and sand, which is a little lesser process than the chip sealing.
So residents where street repair has already been done can expect Friday, Monday, and Tuesday
to have some impact on their access to their driveways. And so I would anticipate either today, they're doing it right now, or maybe a couple hours ago, or tomorrow morning, noticing going out to houses telling people that you're not going to be able to drive on that street for a few hours while the chip seal or slurry seal cures?
Above all, I would hate to sound negative, but remember when this first started, they were going to put notices on the doors? They didn't do that. They put things in the street that said no parking Monday and Tuesday. So I'm hoping they'll
put
share
noticing
their information
on the doors,
with
yes.
people.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's important now when we can't get to our houses. Because I've been asked on my block, and I've told everybody the information you gave us, that there would be 4 days' notice for the day that they couldn't drive in the street. That's what I'm telling everybody.
Yes. Okay. And obviously they've blown that 4 days' notice if they this schedule is a little old. So the 17th, that's less than 4 days from now if those notices aren't up already.
That's really important because
yeah.
you're going to landlock some cars or lock people. You know, we have people on my street, too, that are wheelchair-bound. That well, one of them can load from Kern, but the other one can't.
Mm-hmm.
The noticing's important.
Yes,
so,
I know.
Cool.
Thank you.
Are we good in that one?
I'm good. Thank you.
You're welcome. You got anything?
That was it. I'm very happy.
Now. How about on this side?
Another question to follow up on that. Do you have any sort of information about tithes?
We have sent them a request for change order on that. So in lieu of some of the liquidated damages, to provide the triple layer Cape Seal for Tide Avenue between Island and Zanzibar. Verbally, they've agreed to that. We're just waiting for a signature on a change order.
Okay. All right. And then my future gen item, as I mentioned, was for the next meeting to have an update of the seismic testing for Diablo Canyon. That reviews the upcoming results of today's meeting as well as the Monday, the 20th meeting again here in Morro Bay, Skype from Morro Bay, and a review of some potential city actions to follow up on our previous actions.
Are you good with the consent item report? Or do you need a discussion?
I think it would be good for some public presentation of the outcome of these meetings. It wouldn't have to be lengthy, but there's a strong potential that we'd want to take some follow-up action because it does appear that there's that while the EIR might have been certified today, that there is still an opening to discuss the details of the permit. So I would anticipate some discussion, and as you've said before, you don't like consent items to be pulled.
If you're going to pull it, I'm not pulling it on consent.
So why don't we just make it a regular agenda item?
Okay. Cool, man. You good, George?
Well, I'm not going to give up on my parking down there. So, and I want to at least bring this back for discussion of how it's going on in about 2 months, maybe the meeting after the Harbor Festival, and we can take a look and see how much effect the power plant parking has done for us. And so, I'd like to take a look at this about 2 months from now.
That would be the first meeting in October, but since the Harbor Fest.
Rob Leibig,
exactly.
Can I have you for 1 minute?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God.